Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to hear about Operation Safety Net and get an update from our Minnesota Veterans Homes. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Your Minnesota National Guard is a unique military organization in that we have a dual role. Our chain of command includes both our governor and our president. We serve both overseas in combat roles and here at home in response to state emergencies. More than 13,000 strong, the soldiers and airmen of your Minnesota National Guard are based in more than 60 communities across our great state. From our Air National Guard units in Duluth and the Twin Cities to our Army National Guard units stationed in Rosemont, Bloomington, St. Paul, Camp Ripley, and elsewhere, the soldiers and airmen of your Minnesota National Guard live here, work here, and serve here. It is our mission to be good community partners. We partner with local law enforcement agencies, schools, and an assortment of community organizations as part of our counter-drug program. In our role as emergency management response agency, we're prepared to protect Minnesota from any hostility, be it winter weather, floods, wildfires, civil unrest, or a pandemic. While I'm in the community, people often stop me to thank me for my service. I'm always humbled by that gesture of gratitude, but I'm also proud in the knowledge that the Minnesota National Guard is always ready to protect our community and always there to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to discuss Operation Safety Net today, and I've got two guests in this first segment. First, it's Major General Mike Wickman, who assumed duties as commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division on November 3rd, 2019. He also serves as assistant adjutant general, primary assistant to the adjutant general with the Minnesota Army National Guard. General Wickman, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. Good to talk to you again.
General, last time we had you on the show from your new headquarters, we were talking about your operational tempo of the Minnesota National Guard being very high. Are the current events surrounding this trial that's just started, is that making it go even higher, sir?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, the last time you and I talked, we were in the process of, redeploying aviation units, we're in the process of redeploying one of our infantry battalions and in the process of deploying one of our combined arms battalions. And then, pile on top of that a lot of the activities that we're also doing to support the state, which includes the community-based testing. We're doing warehouse support, support for vaccinations and things of that nature. And now, we're rolling forward to support the state and the community through Operation Safety Net. At this point, we brought on approximately 250 soldiers in support of that. And so, planning for that, executing that, and as things go on, we're prepared to increase our support as the situation dictates. And so, Tom, it just seems to be another busy year for us. But the soldiers and servicemen of the National Guard are just doing a fantastic job, and it's an honor to be with them.
Thank you, sir. Also joining us on this segment is Chief Madaria Arredondo. Chief Rondo is the 53rd chief and first African-American chief in 150-year history of the Minneapolis Police Department, 31-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department. He was named chief in 2017, and his mission is to increase community trust in the Minneapolis Police Department through cultural transformation. He's pursuing this through increased accountability and transparency, including body-worn cameras, procedural justice, the sanctity of life, implicit bias, and reconciliation training. Chief Rondo, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Mr. Lyons, thank you so much and all of your Minnesota Military Radio guests for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. The question of the day, Chief, can you explain to us what is Operation Safety Net?
Yes, thank you so much. Operation Safety Net is really born out of a relationship that Minnesota Public Safety and our soldiers and airmen have had for quite some time. We recognized that last year during the civil unrest, we would be more efficient and better in terms of operationally and keeping our city and region safe by coming together under a unified command structure. And while Operation Safety Net is specific to the court trial, it is bringing together General Wickman's soldiers and airmen. It's also bringing together State Patrol, Hennepin County deputies, Metro Transit Police Department, obviously Minneapolis Police Department, and several other agencies statewide on two main reasons: to help us keep people safe during these trials and to protect property. We realized the events that occurred last year. We saw a lot of devastation in our metro region area, and Operation Safety Net is set up as an apparatus to, again, make sure that people have their First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble and demonstrate, but we are going to ensure that people are safe and that we are protection of property. So that is what Operation Safety Net is, a unified command system, and it is serving our state and certainly our city well.
And, Chief, I understand the city of St. Paul is leading a parallel planning effort with some of the Washington County, Dakota County, State Patrol, National Guard, and standing by as well.
Yes, Mr. Lyons, last year during the summer months, not only did we see the incidents that occurred here in Minneapolis, but certainly we saw some of the property damage and destruction that occurred across the river in St. Paul. So Chief Axtell is working closely with General Wickman, soldiers and airmen, as well as Colonel Langer's teams and others. And so in the event, for example, if things are quiet here in Minneapolis proper, but it's something should spark up in St. Paul or Bloomington, we have the ability under Operation Safety Net in our unified command to deploy resources to where they're needed in the metro region.
And, Chief, the trial has already started, and it's on all the local channels all day, and a lot of people are watching it. What's your message to our listeners all over Minnesota? What do you want to see happen? It's great that you're ready. It's great that you put together this unified command. It's great that you're prepared. What's your message? What would you like the people of Minnesota to hear?
Well, so the one message in terms of safety is that between our guardsmen, between our soldiers and airmen, between all of our public safety folks, we are here to keep you safe. We are here to protect property. At some point, this trial will be over, but we as Minnesotans, we're going to continue to come together. We're a resilient state. We're resilient people. We will get through this. And so that is the message. We're going to be here. The relationships we have with General Wickman's teams, Colonel Langer's teams, I mean, that relationship is going to keep us strong. Again, stay hopeful, and we will get through this.
Thank you, Chief. General Wickman, can you help us understand the role of the Minnesota National Guard within this unified command that's standing by?
Certainly. I'm not going to be as articulate as Chief Arredondo is, but I'll do my best. The Minnesota National Guard, you know, is there to facilitate, you know, the needs of the unified command under many mission sets. So you'll find, as you've already seen, the Minnesota National Guard providing security support to critical infrastructure. But you're also going to see them providing, as the situation dictates, as Chief Arredondo said, we got to be prepared if something changes. We have to be prepared to adapt to whatever the changing situation could be. But you'll also see us providing property protection, fire, EMS, security, precinct security, any kind of traffic control. And so as the situation probably expands and we pull in the requirements, or we see the requirements that exist, the Minnesota National Guard, as it's always been, available to support our partners and civil authorities. And so really, you know, what we can do is grow with the situation as the situation dictates and provide that needed support.
General, one of the visuals I'll always remember is last fall when the rioting was going on, and we saw the Minnesota National Guard come in on, we saw it on TV. They'd file in right behind the Minneapolis Police Department and back them up, and the resistance just kind of drifted away off down the streets. I think you probably want to remind everybody that Minnesota National Guard, we all live here. You're coming in here to help protect our friends and our neighbors, and to remind everyone, let's be safe, let's be reasonable about this. I know, General, that your troops have been doing increased training since last fall, just in this, in case this came up.
Yes, and because, of course, you know, we're responsible for being prepared for any contingency. But as you mentioned, it's a tough balance. You know, the soldiers and the airmen, you know, these are friends and neighbors to those that you know, want to demonstrate and peacefully exercise their First Amendment rights. And, you know, and certainly it can be kind of unsettling when you see local law enforcement, you know, in concert with military forces. You know, it can certainly come across as over militarized. And it may cause folks to be uncomfortable or maybe feel that there's some impact to their free speech, but that's not the case. We're simply, you know, providing extension to local law enforcement, and just as Chief Arredondo said, we want to make sure it is taking place safely. We want to ensure that you know, people's safety is paramount, and that we can do our best to mitigate any issues, you know, to property and physical structures.
Thank you, General. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Major General Mike Wickman and Chief Rondo. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and today we've been discussing Operation Safety Net. My guest has been Major General Mike Wickman, who is the commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division and the assistant adjutant general, and Chief Madaria Arredondo from the Minneapolis Police Department. And joining us now is Colonel Matt Langer, who's been a Minnesota State Trooper since 1999. He's worked up through almost every position in the State Patrol and served for 2.5 years as the assistant chief and 1 year as the acting chief before being appointed colonel chief of the State Patrol in January 2015. And Colonel Langer, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
Colonel, we heard in that first segment where Chief Rondo told us what Operation Safety Net is and why it's necessary, and it's a joint effort between the City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, State of Minnesota, as well as the Metro Transit, Ramsey County, and other local jurisdictions, including Minneapolis Police, Metro Transit Police, Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, Minnesota State Patrol, and the Minnesota National Guard. It's called a unified command. They have access to all kinds of resources. And Colonel, I was wondering if you could explain to us what your role is in that unified command with the Minnesota State Highway Patrol.
That's a great question. So unified command is always a little bit tricky to explain succinctly, but the way that I explain it is like this. Chief Arredondo, as the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, has ultimate responsibility for whatever happens in his city, but we're there to support him because we know that the needs of the city expand well beyond what the city itself can handle on its own with their staffing levels, even on a good day. And so the State Patrol has been with the Minneapolis Police Department and the other agencies that you've mentioned under unified command, meaning we're working together toward the common goal of encouraging people to come out and exercise their First Amendment right, but also making sure that we keep the community safe and that there isn't any property damage or injury. So all of us are working together with those same two operational goals in mind, and we've got great skill and expertise around the table every single day under that unified command model, making those planning decisions that will then shift into operational decisions once we get to that point.
General Wickman, I want to follow up with a question on how that works. I'm visualizing a command center with the police and the sheriffs and the State Patrol and the Minnesota National Guard. Depending on what happens, how is the decision made of who and where to deploy resources?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the Minnesota National Guard, being a military organization, is really comfortable with the hierarchical process. And so we are, you know, fully understand we are a supporting entity. And so therefore, you know, as Colonel Langer mentioned, you know, we follow underneath the command system of Chief Arredondo. And so, you know, our taskings come down through the system, and we facilitate that through liaison officers that we have within all the aspects of the command and control system. And so it really is, it's kind of natural for us to understand that we're here to kind of take orders and follow the instructions that kind of come through the civil authorities. So we've actually been doing this. This isn't unusual for us. It's the same process that you'll find in any type of support to civil authorities. It's just in this case, it's much more robust than maybe we've seen in the past. But it's a great relationship. It's a relationship that goes back through history with a lot of events, national security events. And so the execution and working through the chain of command is a natural thing for us.
So General, for a civilian, it sounds to me like that means local control, resting with Chief Rondo, but access to as many resources as possible so that he can react to the situation on the ground.
Yes, yeah. So, and as we've kind of discussed, you know, one of the things that Colonel Langard mentioned is, you know, the plan. And so, you know, we spent quite a bit of time working through what we felt we'd need, and we're very comfortable with what we feel as far as equipment and personnel go to provide the support to the local leadership.
Thank you, sir. And Colonel Langer, I want to come back to you. We have the right to do some activities to protest. Can you kind of give us a rundown? What are encouraged activities and what are unlawful activities? And I'm going to follow up with the freeway thing, because I just think it's inherently dangerous for a protest to overflow onto a freeway where you've got people going 70 miles an hour. And a very dangerous situation, sir.
This is a great question. So one of the things that we did early on with Unified Command and working with other people, including folks that represent community groups, is we developed a list of encouraged and then illegal behaviors, or prohibited behaviors. The encouraged behaviors are what I opened with, that, you know, we want people to come out and have their voice be heard, to express their opinion, to do so peacefully.
Thank you, sir. And Chief, I want to come back to you. It seems to me that we're able to do some peaceful assembly. We're able to process as long as we're careful. There's a fine line between protesting and then slipping into the abyss of it's a riot and it's out of control and we're destroying property. How do you manage that fine line, Chief?
Oh, that's a great question. And part of it is education and awareness. So one of the advantages that our Unified Command has had that we didn't have last year, quite frankly, is we've had several months to message, communicate. I don't believe that you can ever over-communicate in these situations. As Colonel Langer, my friend, had mentioned, the encouraged activity and the unlawful activity that will not be tolerated, we've been pushing that out to different community groups. We've been talking to faith-based groups, even activists, to again, allow them their First Amendment rights, which we are all abided by through our Constitution to uphold, but also letting them know that we're not going to tolerate that unlawful activity. So a lot of it has been education, and even some of the demonstrations that have happened more recently where individuals have decided to make bad choices and conduct themselves criminally, we've made arrests, and we will continue to do that.
Colonel Langer, I want to come back to you. We've got about 30 seconds. Did you want to elaborate on these peaceful assemblies flowing out onto a freeway?
I do, actually. You know, we've been really steadfast in our public message from the beginning that goes back years, saying that there are so many places for one to express their First Amendment rights that you can do that all over the place, but the freeway is not one of those areas where one can do that. It's illegal, and I always follow that up to say, why is it illegal? Because it's dangerous. We simply cannot protect someone while they're protesting on the freeway. We can't protect them from an errant driver, a distracted driver, or, regrettably, in some places around the country, from a driver who has really bad intentions. And so for all of those reasons, it's just not a safe place to demonstrate or to express your First Amendment rights. And so we're working very hard to prevent that from occurring, to respond if it does happen. And as I've said, you know, I can threaten all day long that we're going to take enforcement action, but I also like to say I'm asking groups to not go on the freeway because I don't want to see someone get hurt. That's the plain way to say it. So please don't do it. We're happy to facilitate your marching on city streets, helping support local law enforcement. But The freeway is just an inherently dangerous place any given day to be on foot, especially during some type of protest or demonstration.
Thank you, sir. Chief, 30 seconds left. How does it feel to have all these great organizations and resources available and there at to help you if needed?
Mr. Lyons, it really highlights Minnesota's best. For us to have General Wickman's soldiers and airmen, the colonels, troopers, and everyone, it really highlights and showcases the relationship, how we feel about protecting our communities. Many of the soldiers and airmen actually live and work in Minneapolis, so that's wonderful. I am a little bit jealous that during Super Bowl, General Wickman's soldiers had more selfies taken than us, and so I'll have to talk to him about that. But it's a great relationship, as General Wickman said. We've been doing this for quite some time, so it's keeping our state safe.
They had better winter gear on then, Chief. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. We've been joined by Major General Mike Wickman from the Minnesota National Guard, Colonel Matt Langer from the Minnesota State Highway Patrol, and Minneapolis's Police Chief, Madaria Arredondo. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get an update on our Minnesota Veterans Homes. But first, it's time for the Commissioner Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
At the start of the Civil War, Minnesota was the first state to offer volunteers for the Union Army. Ordinary men from Minnesota made an extraordinary sacrifice. Only 3 years after achieving statehood, over 24,000 Minnesotans answered the call to service. These brave Minnesotans oftentimes found themselves on the front line or the last to leave the battlefield. Minnesotans played a pivotal role, and their service will not be forgotten. The Civil War changed Minnesota in many ways. After the war was over, many soldiers from other states were drawn here because of the Minnesotans they had met and the stories they had heard. The Civil War deeply shaped us, and the 1st Minnesota Volunteer Infantry Regiment holds a special place in the history of our state.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Doug Hughes was appointed Deputy Commissioner of Veterans Health Care at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in July of 2016. In this role, he oversees operations for Minnesota's 5 state veteran homes and the health care division. And those 5 state veterans' homes are located in Fergus Falls, Hastings, Laverne, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay. Doug, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks for having me back, Tom. It's been a little while, but it's great to be here.
Well, Doug, as you know, over the course of the last year with this COVID pandemic, we've had to do everything in bubbles and be careful, and we haven't even had a chance to go into the radio station. We've done this from remotely, just like we're doing it today with Teams and all of those things. But can you tell us, with regard to your 5 nursing homes, how has COVID affected the management of those homes, and how are our veterans doing, how are our employees doing, how are our volunteers doing?
Well, just a clarification at the beginning, we have 4 skilled nursing homes, and then we also have the domiciliary down in Hastings. But as everybody knows, skilled nursing facilities in the country were in the eye of the storm. I mean, they were the number one area hit with illness and death. Excuse me. And we were not alone. Unfortunately, I'd like to recognize those 29 veterans that died in our nursing homes and the 1 staff member in Minneapolis who died. Our numbers were about the same as everyone else, but I really do have to thank the extra effort that our staff did over the past year. It really was remarkable. We had lots of cases in Minneapolis. We had an outbreak in Silver Bay. We had an outbreak in Fergus. And staff really had to come together. And I'd just like to mention that Laverne was only 1 of 22 skilled nursing facilities that did not have any resident positives. All the positives down there were staff. So that's really quite an accomplishment for the Laverne home. And you have to thank Luke Scrivers, who was the administrator. He's moved on, and Scott Buchanan, who's there now. But it's really been difficult. I can't tell you the stress that everyone has been under. not only the staff and residents, but families who are unable to come in on a regular basis and visit their loved ones. Fortunately, right now, we are loosening up some of those restrictions. But, you know, every time we have one case positive, whether it's resident or staff, that's considered an outbreak. And things change. You know, the type and amount of visits go down. But I really have to commend our staff. We're not out of this yet by any stretch of the imagination. Please don't get that that thought. And I believe the governor has expressed that on many occasions. But I think we have fared very well in that.
Doug, I know that the governor prioritized our residents of all the homes across the state. I'm sure that included the veterans' homes that you oversee. Have your residents pretty much all had an opportunity to get the vaccine?
As a matter of fact, Tom, we have been, I'll say, memorialized by the governor in the one of the executive orders, and I may have that exactly, but when they were rescinding our executive order, which was 20-03, in that we had some of the highest vaccination rates in the state for both residents and staff. I believe our resident average vaccination rate is 97%. And also that our staff vaccination rate is somewhere in the mid-80s. I know that Minneapolis, that I just looked at, the Minneapolis staff is at 90%, which is astounding. But that, once again, was a lot of work. That was a lot of marketing techniques that we used, a lot of key opinion leaders, formal and informal leaders, to reach those numbers. And that hard work paid off. I think we saved lives because of that.
Doug, I know that you use a lot of volunteers in the veterans' homes. Has the COVID impacted them? Have they had to stay away? Are they able to come back now? They're pretty important to you, all the volunteers that you get.
Volunteers are essential for us. There's no doubt about that. We tried to help vaccinate those essential volunteers, which we were able to do, because anytime we had some vaccine that was available after residents and staff, we were allowed to vaccinate them, which we did. We're still little by little trying to get some of those volunteers back in. We may, and I don't know the exact numbers on that, but we're working very hard because, like I said, they're very essential. They do a lot of things with the residents in our facility. But, you know, it would be pretty much on a one-to-one basis. It wouldn't be group settings, because right now we're still not allowed to do things like bingo in some of the locations and other group activities. There's no singing. There's no, instrument playing, that sort of thing, where they might help transport or do things with them. So we're coming back with the essential volunteers and dribs and drabs, but we're looking forward for a full house of them. I can tell you that.
Doug, we hope you can get back to some kind of normal as soon as possible. Now, I understand there's some new leadership at a few of your homes. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, we're very excited about this. And we have two new administrators and one administrator that changed locations. I'll start with that. And Scott Buchanan, I believe he received the distinction of being one of the 40 under 30 in the Fergus Falls area for his leadership. He opted to go to Laverne when Luke Scribers took another position at a local hospital. And so he's in Laverne, and he's already doing a great job there. We have Danny Donner, who's up in Silver Bay, and she's a former life enrichment coordinator. She's up there. And then Jonathan Stone is now in Fergus Falls, which he started a couple of weeks ago. But I really have to thank Brittany Vole, who was the assistant administrator in Minneapolis, and she covered for both Laverne and Fergus Falls during the transition. So we are very fortunate to have all of those great administrators, and looking forward to Tom Paul retiring somewhere in the near future in Minneapolis.
Doug, thanks for that update. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to ask Doug Hughes, who is the Deputy Commissioner of Healthcare with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, to give us an update on some new veteran home construction. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Doug Hughes, the Deputy Commissioner of Healthcare for Minnesota Veterans Homes from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And, Doug, we talked in the first segment about the four existing veterans homes, Fergus Falls, Laverne, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay. And then the fifth one, which is Hastings, which we refer to as a domiciliary. Could you tell us briefly how that's different from the other four?
Yes. The domiciliary program is the model, I think, when veterans homes first opened in Minnesota. And that's for veterans who are generally independent, but might need a little bit of help with some health issues, some mental health, chemical dependency issues, vocational issues. Our administrator for the domiciliary program, Mike Anderson, and the director of nursing, Tori Pierce, have done a great job in developing new programs for them. And it's been a great success. One of the longtime residents there is now moving to independent living, and all of us just went, wow, you know, that's what we're here for. We're here for you to provide training and education so you can live on your own. We're so excited.
He graduated out of the Hastings domiciliary. Good for him. Doug, we've been talking for a few years. I think it was in 2018, the Minnesota legislature allocated $33 million toward the cost of projects which were associated with the opening new homes, Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. And I just saw a message from Commissioner Herkey this week that says the MDVA has been notified that all three of Minnesota's proposed new state veterans home projects will receive federal funding, something we've been waiting for a long time. Can you tell us about that? Are we ready to put shovels in the ground, Doug?
I think we are. I mean, you know, I first heard about it, you know, and my reaction was, wow. But then when I read about the additional $500 million and kind of looked at the list and the dollar amount, we figured that maybe Bemidji, which was at the top of the list, and Montevideo would get funded, and Preston might not. But in the past, you know, money has become available. So, I mean, we were pretty much kind of sort of blown away, but we think this is a great opportunity for greater Minnesota veterans. We are so excited. I can tell you, I spoke to Joe Hoffman, who's the city administrator in Preston, to Scotty Allison, CBSO, Bemidji, and they are just so excited. And I know that there was a celebration down in Preston, I believe in the Legion, that everybody down there was, they were beside themselves, that they were so excited that they might be able to, if needed, live in the veterans home in Preston. I think this is really unprecedented. It's going to be a lot of work, I can tell you that. I mean, we're just coming off of COVID, right? We just ran the 2.25 mile swim and rode the 100 mile bike, and now I guess we have to do the marathon, right? Isn't that a triathlon? And I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a lot of work.
Well, I'm sure you're ready for it, and the whole MDVA is excited. The construction, the commissioner says, could begin as early as fall of this year with an anticipated 18-month construction schedule. Almost 200 new rooms, Doug. That's got to help with the backlog of veterans waiting to get into the homes.
Without a doubt, you know, and how many veterans and families decided not to put their loved one in one of the veterans' homes, and because they would be far away from them in greater Minnesota, but now they'll have that opportunity to be nearer to them. I think, to me, that is probably the number one thing about this, and I couldn't be happier. Now, there's going to be some challenges. staffing is probably going to be our number one challenge. As we know, healthcare workers can sometimes be in short supply. And so we've already had plans in the works, and we've already met with some of the communities about bringing on staff and educating staff and doing all sorts of things. And so I would like people in those areas, or not, or if you're planning on moving to those areas, to look for some announcements from the Minnesota Department of Affairs about training and job openings in those three locations. It's going to be a full court press. We're hiring everything from administrator, director of nursing, assistant director of nursing, some additional central office RN staff who will be helping with the setup, food service workers, general maintenance workers, LPNs, CNAs, everything. And we hope to be ready at that time, and will be.
Doug, I'm sure you'll be ready. And for all our listeners out there, if you want a career with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, get a hold of them. They're always hiring. Doug, we just got about a minute left. What would you like to see happen in the second half of 2021 and 2022 while you're getting ready for these new beds?
What I would like to see is a continuation of, I believe, where we're headed. One of my goals when I first came on was standardization across the agency where it made sense, and keep things local where that made sense. I believe we've achieved that. I know that it's been a lot of hard work for, Senior Director Simone Hogan, who I know, Carolyn Schauer, Paula Nowinski, and Dr. Bruce Meyer. But I think that's what our overall goal is to improve in standardization and move forward with the three new homes.
Doug, I wish you all the luck the next couple of years, and we'll be following you closely. Thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Anytime. Thanks, Tom.
That was Doug Hughes, the Deputy Commissioner of Healthcare at Minnesota Veterans Homes on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Greg Peterson, the President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and our Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Greg, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom. It's real good to be back. It's a real nice day, and I'm glad that we're on the air again with you guys.
Greg, I hope we're coming down to the tail end of the pandemic and how it's affected everybody. And I know that I've had a chance to get out to the VA and get my two shots, and I'm thrilled to have that done. I understand they've opened up the shots to not only all of our veterans, but to some of their families. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It is actually through legislation that was passed out in Washington, D.C. and signed into law. It's called the Save Lives Act, and it will allow veterans and their spouses, so the spouse and caregivers, to get vaccinations through VA medical centers.
And was there a change attached to that about whether you have to pay for it or not pay for it?
No, there shouldn't be any copayment for that at all. There's not any copayment for any vaccination, as a matter of fact. If somebody wanted to get a shingle shot or anything else through the VA, there's no copayments for vaccinations.
Okay, but if they had to pay for their dependents or caregivers early, I understand that they will probably be reimbursed for that as well.
Oh, yeah. There was a time, even a year ago, when the VA stopped collecting copayments. And then here in about November, they sent everybody a letter, and they said, well, we're going to start that back up. And, oh, by the way, you owe 9 months or 8 months of your copayments, and that put everybody into a fret. And then just now, on January 22nd, President Biden signed an act that will cancel out, or will forgive, maybe that's a good word to use this weekend, it will forgive all of that previous copayment debt.
Okay, so for all our veterans, if you haven't already registered, get a hold of the VA and get in there and get those shots so we can put this pandemic behind us. Greg, we just got a couple of minutes left. I understand you've got a couple of new county veteran service officers.
Yeah, we sure do. We've got new in McLeod County, and that's Glencoe is the county seat, is Brianna Lauer. And she walks into a job. She was a CVSO previously in Illinois. So they're up and running with that. And then in Nobles County, which is Worthington, Minnesota, they have Jim Dunn, and he has just now started after Bill Brockberg left. Bill had been there a long time. Jim's a former Air Force security policeman and doing a great job down in Worthington, Minnesota.
Now, one last question, Greg. Are you going to be able to have your in-person spring and fall conventions to bring all your county veteran service officers in for some training?
Oh, yeah, we sure are. In fact, we were up there just last week, and that's going to fall right after the 20th anniversary of 9/11, which will be on a Saturday, and I know Commissioner Herkey's got some events planned there. So we're going to start the Sunday the 12th through the 14th. Sure would like to have you guys up there, too.
Very good. Greg, we'll have to talk about that, check the schedules, see what we can do. I want to thank you for calling in from out on the road today.
You're very welcome. I love being on your program. As a matter of fact, I'm listening to your podcasts right now as I travel.
Well, thank you, Greg. That was Greg Peterson, president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major General Mike Wickman, Colonel Matt Langer from the State Highway Patrol, Chief Madeira Rendando, from the Minneapolis Police Force, Doug Hughes from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and Greg Peterson from the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we hear from the veterans organizations and state legislators as we approach our annual Veterans Day on the Hill. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.com.